Hello, this is Barbara Ridenour with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Friday, January 31st, 2025. We'll start today's reading on the front page with Millikan University, Exemplary Education for Future Teachers. Internship Central to Millikan Program, again recognized by ISBE. School was always a haven for Connor Downdivier. I would love to be that teacher that students, even if it's only one, is able to know that someone is there and someone cares for them and that they are safe, said Downdivier, who is studying to be an elementary teacher at Millikan University. Millikan's elementary education program has been designated exemplary for the fourth consecutive year by the Illinois State Board of Education, which rates teacher preparation programs throughout the state. ISBE ranks programs on several factors, including the quality of the teaching candidates, knowledge and skills for teaching, performance as classroom teachers, and contributions to state needs. Millikan has received a 92% for the last 2 years. Those rankings had a significant impact on Downdivier's decision, and I apologize if I am mispronouncing this person's name. Downdivier's decision to apply to Millikan, coupled with Millikan's location close to home, and it was an easy choice, he said. Millikan's elementary education program has plenty of great opportunities to prepare me for my future career, he said. One of the best things they do is start you out in your first semester in a classroom. Millikan has many built-in internships that help us as students prepare for what we will be doing. This both helps us know early on if this is for sure something we want to do and helps us get an early start on knowing how to do things. Starting internships in freshman year is a significant part of making students are fully prepared for teaching, said Chris Cunnings, director of Millikan School of Education. To ensure that they're not overwhelmed, at first, their tasks in elementary classrooms are things like taking attendance and helping with one-on-one tutoring or small groups. Then, during internship experiences between sophomore year and student teaching, we gradually ramp up the expectations in terms of planning instruction, teaching lessons, assessing student learning, and being a reflective practitioner, Cunnings said. He added, another cool feature of our ELED program is that for our upper-level internships, we've paired some important teaching methods coursework. For instance, ELED math teaching methods, reading teaching methods, science teaching methods, and classroom management to be taken concurrently while they're going and teaching lessons in area schools. This allows our students to apply what they're learning during on-campus coursework in a classroom setting while it's fresh on their minds and while they have multiple faculty members to go to for questions, guidance, and support. Most faculty in the program have extensive experience as classroom teachers and also serve as academic advisors to the students, so they can give real-world guidance throughout the students' years at Millikan, including helping them navigate the process of gaining a teaching license and specific credentials, he added. At a time when the entire nation is experiencing a shortage of teachers and other professionals in education, such as school nurses and school social workers, Cunnings said, it's the perfect time to consider teaching as a career. It's my belief that education is the most noble profession that exists, and being in the midst of a dire teacher shortage is a great time to enter the teaching profession, he said. Young children need and deserve committed teachers that genuinely care about their academic, social, and emotional development. Schools and communities need passionate and well-trained educators that are willing to serve as teachers, leaders, and role models for their children and adolescents. Millikan senior Ella Curtis is sure that when she has her own classroom, she's going to be ready. Reflecting on my 4 years at Millikan, I can confidently say they equipped me with the knowledge to be a successful teacher, Curtis said. Whether it be field experience or classes with professors and peers, I have a variety of tools in my teacher toolbox to help me succeed in my first year of teaching. She continued, "My favorite part of the program was my junior block. While it may have been one of the hardest years, I learned the ins and outs of being a teacher. I enjoyed learning how to teach different subjects and how to make everything engaging for students. My peers and I were able to engage in a variety of activities that semester that ignited our creativity and passion. I'm excited to apply these skills to my own classroom one day. While it can be nerve-wracking thinking that one day I will be responsible for the growth of developing minds, I know I have been given the skill set to teach, love, and inspire my students," she said. One class is devoted to preparing future teachers for student teaching, and that's one of the things that Kaylee Itzenheiser found helpful. She was able to immerse herself in the same classroom where she would student teach and learn the processes and procedures ahead of time. Classroom management classes helped her understand how to create the atmosphere she wants in her own classroom when she begins teaching and how to handle the challenges that might arise. Since Millikan uses performance-based learning, students are able to go into the classroom the first semester at school, allowing us to see what we are working towards for the next 4 years. Itzenheiser said, I also loved how the teachers truly want what's best for you and will help you accomplish your goals. My relationships with my professors are priceless. I feel seen in the department. And the front page photos that accompany this article show juniors Mackenzie Green and Bella Smith making observations on an experiment in the elementary science methods class at Millikan University in Decatur on Wednesday, January 29, 2025. Millikan's elementary education program has been designated exemplary for the fourth consecutive year by the Illinois State Board of Education with a 92%. And the people in this picture... There are four people. The one we see, it's Mackenzie Green in the, she's got a beaker with something in it, and she's testing it, and Bella Smith is watching on, and then there are two other students at another table doing experiments. And then a smaller photo shows Ashley Johnson Jones, Will Simpson, and Faith Wilson making observations on an experiment in the elementary science methods class at Millikan in Decatur on Wednesday, January 29, 2025. And they're all sitting at a table doing a similar experiment with a beaker and something some liquid in the beaker, and they're measuring something. And then it looks like a professor or teacher of teachers is in the background checking on them, and other students are doing a similar experiment or the same experiment at another table. Also on the front page, Decatur, $3 million grant to boost industrial growth. Pritzker announces state funding through Commerce Department. Decatur's efforts to promote development in its industrial northeast quadrant received a major boost from the state earlier this week. Governor J.B. Pritzker announced on Wednesday that Decatur is the recipient of a $3.07 million grant through the Illinois Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity Regional Site Readiness Program. The city was among two dozen grantees awarded a collective $31 million through the program. The objective of the program is to invest resources to enable more rapid development of state industrial sites. In every corner of Illinois, there are communities that are overflowing with untapped potential, but do not have the resources and support they need to fully realize it, Pritzker said at an event announcing the grant recipients in downstate Jerseyville. Now, standing in front of you, I'm happy to say a whole lot has changed. We are investing in our sites, we are thinking about the future, and we are growing economic development across the state. Decatur's grants funds will help cover the costs in planning and constructing of a 1.1-mile water main extension from Brush College Road to Cundiff North to Cundiff Road. Though not covered by this grant, plans eventually call for another extension west of Cundiff Road to create a loop with an existing water main at Hickory Point Road near Forsyth. This main would service land north of Interstate 72 that is viewed as prime for development given existing sewer infrastructure, access to electricity from a nearby Ameren substation, and proximity to the interstate. The longtime home of Archer Daniels Midland Company and Primient's hulking facilities, the city's northeast quadrant has been the site of a slew of positive economic development announcements in recent years. French biotechnology company InnovaFeed opened its North American Insect Innovation Center in Decatur last year and plans to build a larger plant to commercially produce 60,000 tons of bug-derived protein and nutritional products a year. T/CCI Manufacturing has invested millions into its facility in recent years to transition to electric compressor manufacturing while partnering with Richland Community College to create an EV innovation cluster that will include a climate center for innovation and research facility. Primient last year announced a $400 million investment into its Decatur facility. It was announced last year, however, that a major chemical production expansion project between South Korean firm LG Chem and ADM would not move forward. State Senator Doris Turner, Democrat of Springfield, said these new funds will ensure that we are in the best possible position to attract new job creators and take on future growth opportunities. Decatur Mayor Julie Moore Wolf could not immediately be reached for comment. The grant funds the city's received will also be used for preliminary engineering to supply groundwater to the area. The city has identified the DeWitt well fields, currently a backup water supply, as a potential source. The grant required a local match, though it was not immediately clear how much the city would set aside for the project. Mattoon was also awarded more than $2.3 million through the grant program. Those funds will be used for substation improvements in 74 acres at the Mattoon Enterprise Park. And the photo on page 2 here shows employees of the French biotechnology company InnovaFeed walking toward the groundbreaking ceremony for its flagship U.S. plant in Decatur on Tuesday, January 10, 2023. The company uses product and energy waste from the nearby Archer Daniels Midland Company, visible in the background, to run its insect protein facility. And that's what you see as it described the ADM is in the background, and these two employees of the French biotechnology company are on a field walking toward the plant. Also on the front page, Macon County Courts. Decatur teen gets 30 years for murder. When he was just 15 years old, Otis L. Allen lured a teenage Decatur acquaintance into an empty nursing home building and stabbed him to death with a weapon police described as a large dagger. Allen was still wearing blood-spattered T-shirt when officers found and arrested him the evening of July 30, 2023, the same day 15-year-old Tyler L. Eubanks was killed. On Wednesday, Allen, now 17, and charged as an adult, faced Macon County Circuit Court presiding Judge Thomas Griffith and admitted a charge of murder. It was a plea deal that will see Allen sentenced to 30 years to be served at 100%. The maximum term he could have received was 60 years. The sentence means Allen, now doing junior grade high school school lessons in youth custody, will be 47 years old before he's eligible for release. The sentence will not be formally imposed, however, until February 7th, when relatives of Eubanks will get their opportunity to confront Allen in the courtroom and tell him to his face about the emotional impact of the murder. A sworn affidavit filed by Decatur Police Department about the case said Allen and a then 15-year-old partner in the crime, Jamarian A. Lloyd, had arranged to meet the victim and lure him inside the empty former nursing home next to Monroe Park. A teenage female witness told police what happened next. She described how, as they were walking around the building, she could hear Otis whispering to Jamarian, asking if he should do it now, said Detective James Wrigley, who signed the affidavit. She described seeing Otis grab Tyler from behind, upon which she ran out of the building. She described how Otis and Jamarian eventually exited the building and Otis's hand was covered in blood. Other witnesses had described seeing Lloyd holding a light up so Allen could see what he was doing as he attacked the victim. Judge Griffith asked Macon County State's Attorney Diane Curry and Defense Attorney Lindsay Evans about the circumstances of the murder, adding, "There was no good reason why this happened." Is that a fair statement as far as we know? Evans said Lloyd had offered up some additional details. She told the judge Jamarian Lloyd has given a new statement, which did sort of provide some background information, but not really establishing a firm motive. Lloyd denies murder charges and is due back in court for a pretrial on February 6th. Allen's case had been scheduled for a jury trial February 10th until he changed his mind and took a plea deal. In more news on page A3, Eastern Illinois University, amazing person. Community fills EIU ballroom for memorial for student. Members of the Black Student Union, like many others at Eastern Illinois University, have been mourning the death of not just a classmate this week, but also a friend. Kyla Broadway, who is president of the student group, said their friendship with Yaakov Dennis, 22, of Chicago, has inspired them to do everything they can to celebrate and preserve the memory of him, including participating in vigils on Wednesday. Kov was an amazing person, honestly, Broadway said. If it was any of us, he would have done the same thing. Dennis died at 10:34 a.m. Saturday at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana as a result of what police said was a self-inflicted gunshot wound at a gas station near campus. The Charleston Police Department previously said Dennis called 911 to request help. A responding officer was disarmed. And then Dennis took possession of the firearm and shot himself shortly after 1 a.m. Those events can be seen unfolding on video footage released Thursday by the Illinois State Police, who are investigating the incident. A vigil Wednesday evening filled the Martin Luther King Jr. University Union's Grand Ballroom, and more than 100 of those attendees took part in a preceding candlelight vigil and a balloon release at the alumni clock tower. EIU declared Wednesday to be a day of reflection and care in memory of Dennis. It canceled all in-person and online classes for the day to ensure students had the opportunity to participate in coping skills, activities, mindfulness meditation, and other events throughout the day. Jada Israel, one of many Classmates and friends of Dennis who spoke at the vigil said that she was pleasantly surprised that so many people turned out that night. She said the vigils raised awareness about his death and helped those who will be unable to attend his funeral on February 8th at New Deliverance Church in Chicago to mourn together. "It's a way to bring the community together," Israel said. "In times like this, it's important for us to find that there are people who care. It is very helpful." Classmates of Dennis mourned alongside his family at the vigils. His godbrother, Tavantre Moore, said Dennis brought sunlight into people's lives through his friendly personality and was always willing to help anyone in need. "He was one of those persons that God took too soon," Moore said. A memorial march for Dennis is set for 1 p.m. Sunday from EIU's Old Main West to the vicinity of the shooting, the Lambeau service station at 200 West Lincoln Avenue. Laments about the manner of Dennis's death were shared during Wednesday's vigils, along with memories about his joyful and helpful nature. Photos shown at the vigils depicted his youth in Chicago, his service in the Illinois National Guard from 2021 to 2024, and his studies at EIU. Classmate Joseph Percy said afterward that he met Dennis while they were living on the fourth floor of EIU's Lawson Hall, where the residents became a tight-knit group of friends. "Cove was just one of those people who could just light up a room," Percy said. "I'm just glad I'm able to be here to show support." And the photo accompanying this photos show it's an outdoor picture showing Tavantre Moore, the godbrother of student Yaakov Dennis, on the left, leading a balloon release at the end of a candlelight vigil at Eastern Illinois University in Charleston on Wednesday, January 29, 2025. And there's all these big star, blue star, Mylar balloons taking flight, and the people on the ground letting them go. And then there's a small picture, a close-up of Yaakov Dennis. State government lawmaker calls received on migrants in prison. This is from Springfield. A Republican state lawmaker from Southern Illinois claims she has received some phone calls from anonymous Illinois Department of Corrections employees about inmates who are immigrants without legal status. Last week, State Senator Terry Bryant, Republican of Murfreesboro, posted to her social media accounts a memorandum from the IDOC to its employees reminding them to follow the Trust Act, a law signed by then-Governor Bruce Rauner in 2017 that generally prohibits state and local law enforcement, including state corrections officers, from participating in federal immigration enforcement. Bryant, an IDOC employee for 2 decades before her election to the state legislature in 2014, urged employees to confide in her information pertaining to undocumented inmates. "I won't rat you out. I will notify Immigration and Customs Enforcement," Bryant said last week. Since then, Bryant claims she has received phone calls from employees about undocumented inmates. She instructed her staff to not ask for names of those calling her office in order to ensure they are not reprimanded. "I ask for the offender's name, the offender's institutional number, and what facility the offender is in, which they're located," Bryant said at a press conference at the state capitol on Tuesday. "So I don't know if it's their family who are calling. I don't know if it's staff at the facilities that are calling specifically, because I don't want to know who those folks are, and then I can protect them from those who would go after them for reporting someone who has violated federal law." Governor J.B. Pritzker on Tuesday pushed back on Bryant's claims, insisting that Illinois' prisons do not track citizenship status for inmates and are compliant with federal law. "People who are being held in our jails and prisons, we do not have a record of if they are undocumented or not, and we don't keep those records, Pritzker said. If a federal official shows up with a criminal warrant to pick them up, we hand them over. Pritzker said, that's how it works. A spokesperson for IDOC did not return a request for comment on Bryant's remarks. Representative Greg Johnson, Democrat of East Moline, who spent more than 30 years as a corrections officer and supervisor with IDOC, said he believes Bryant's recent actions are performative. It's grandstanding. I like Senator Bryant, but it's grandstanding, Johnson said. Many, many times over the years, we had individuals whose immigration would come pick up at the end of their term. It's not a common occurrence, but they know where they're at. They do come get them. Over the years, I saw many transferred out. Bryant, alongside Senators Andrew Chesney, Republican of Freeport, and Neil Anderson, Republican of Andalusia, slammed Illinois' immigration laws at a press conference on Tuesday. Pritzker says he wants law enforcement to deport violent criminals and the undocumented, but that is, in fact, a lie, Anderson said. He knows that the law that he continues to support makes it virtually impossible for law enforcement to coordinate with immigration officials. The three Republican senators have introduced legislation that would amend the Trust Act to allow state and local law enforcement agencies to cooperate with ICE if an undocumented person is charged with or convicted of a felony. The proposal would also require a state or local law enforcement agency to notify ICE when they have an undocumented person in custody. Bryant said, and Chesney have also proposed a bill that would appeal the Trust Act entirely. Decatur resident displaced after early morning house fire. A Decatur resident will be looking for another place to live after an early morning house fire, according to a press release issued by the Decatur Fire Department. Crews responded to a house fire at approximately 3:20 a.m. Thursday at 621 East Prairie Street, Decatur. The first unit arrived on the scene to find a one-story home engulfed in thick black smoke. Other arriving companies assisted with extinguishment, searched for victims, and ventilated the home of smoke. Neil Elder, Deputy Chief of Operations, stated in the press release, one occupant was in the home and asleep when the fire started. She was alerted of the fire by a smoke detector, allowing her to exit the home without injury. The occupant has been displaced due to the extensive damage sustained to the home. The fire is under investigation by the Decatur Fire Department. Warrant issued for a man sought in fatal stabbing. An arrest warrant was issued Thursday for Decatur man Timothy D. Chatman, who is being sought on first-degree murder charges in the stabbing death of a 26-year-old male victim, according to the Decatur Police Department. Officers responded to the 1200 block of North Church Street at approximately 4:10 a.m. Thursday after a report of a stabbing. Detective Sergeant Brian Earls of the Criminal Investigations Division stated in a press release, upon arrival, officers located a 26-year-old male suffering from multiple stab wounds, Earls said. He was transported to Decatur Memorial Hospital by ambulance, where he later succumbed to his injuries. Police confirmed the murder warrant for Chapman 28 on their Facebook page. Anyone with information about his whereabouts is asked to contact the DPD's Criminal Investigations Division at 217-424-2734. Again, that's 424-2734, or Crime Stoppers, 217-423-8477. Again, 423-8477, or 424-2734. And that's all we have time for the first half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Friday, January 31st, 2025. This is Barbara Ridenour. Please stay tuned.